So, like, take us back to Evelyn as a girl. Like, what was your childhood like? Who were you then? What were some of the things going on?
I think I was a. Now I get this told a lot that I have my own son, right? And I get I hear my grandma telling me a lot, like, he's reminding me so much of you. You were also so talkative, you knew exactly what you wanted, you were captivating people. She often tells me the story of when I was 3 years old, our general doctor, when he came home because my sister, I think, was sick, and he was a very honorable old man. Everybody had respect for him. They were seating him, you know, in German, the how you approach, so like how you talk someone when you have like the utmost respect. And I got him to play flute with me on the ground. And so I was very, you know, like they said, very lively. And then when I came to school, that kind of changed. Like very early, I found school boring. So I had this in the first, I remember in the first class when math was introduced, I loved that. And there was a little boy, he was, I think, coming from Bosnia, I think. And so he couldn't speak German, but he was also really good at math. And our thing was in the first, like, school year ever, who could do it faster, him or me? And then when I was in second year, I could write, and I wrote my first book. And I remember bringing that to school because my dad also encouraged me, and I got destroyed there. The other kids were making so much like fun of me for having written a book, you know? So I brought it home, and I kind of never talked about this again. And then it became with school was really easy. And so I had very good grades. And then when I had was the first time when I was 10 years, you switch school in Austria, right? And so there it kind of continued like that. And then I had a bigger surgery where something went wrong and I couldn't go to the school for 2 months. And then when I came back, I still had like all ones in Austria. It's like ones, like A's. And then I got a lot of kind of hate for that. Because I wasn't there, right? So how is she like getting the best grades? And they also had like a little bit of a messed up system where if you get like all those good grades, you can take a few days off. So that was then a lot of jealousy involved, right? Because she already got so many days off. What the heck?
Like, forget the 4-hour work week. It's like you're the 4-hour school week.
Yeah. And so I started to hide that a little bit. So I was purposely like performing worse in tests and so that I could not stand out so much. But I was kind of, you know, always really good with it. And when I was 14, I moved out from my home. So my mom had BPT, and it was not the best environment at home. And so I decided that I want to move out, and I started to work as a waitress because that was the only thing where they would not officially have to hire you, and you could work at that young age. And I think that was the first time I started to make that connection between earning money is freedom, is security, right? And so I think that that's a huge driver for me is making money means freedom, means independence, means security, and I can provide for myself and the people I love, right? And that I care about. So that connection was made. And then, yeah, always had the love for writing. And I thought that I will actually work at the radio station and write for them because I made an internship there. And then they told me, no, that's not how you make money. You have to study something properly so you can finance your passion for writing. Studied law, didn't like it, had a back injury. And then I had the first online shop in our area was opening up, and they were looking for somebody to write product description. And at that time, I already had a fashion blog. So, you know, I always was like doing, I was always wanting to do things and started project. And I had this knowledge from SEO, content writing. I applied, I got the job. I was done faster than I thought. At that time, they were just breaking up with the agency, and I wrote the marketing concept and submitted it for them. And they were like, yeah. And then I never heard back from my boss. Like, and I was heartbroken, right? Because I was up all night and like writing my thoughts and how I would do that because I had such a clear vision for, I hated that agency, and I was so glad when they were gone. And I sent it to him, and there was no response. And a few weeks later, he was like, what company was that where you sent that concept? This was actually really good. I was like, I sent that. And he's like, you sent that. Yeah. Can I? And then he was like, you want to do this? Yeah, I would love to do that. And he gave me the chance. And then that was the first time I could run Facebook ads, right? And so all that with the numbers again really clicked for me.
Yeah.
Because it was like, you have to be creative for the creative. And you can have the numbers so you can measure how performant your creativity is, right? So now you link those two things together, like your drive for making money because that means security and being successful, and your creativity. So suddenly there's a measurement stick for your creativity, right? So how good is your creativity? And that really hooked me. Studied marketing, and then I started to be hired by my professors because the marketing was still very much like offline, classical media driven, right? They were teaching you how to place like classical advertisement. And I had that insight from online marketing. And so they hired me for projects, and that was when I started my company, so I can send them the invoices for the work that I did. And yeah, that's kind of how it started.
Crazy. I mean, it's amazing to see how you start gathering all of the tools that you now use every single day in your business and every single day in your school community and the rest of your company. You know, it's also interesting to me, like most of the people that we've interviewed who are doing really well on school didn't enjoy real school.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And they had like a bit of a conflict with it.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting that like these kind of, you know, school rejects, for lack of a better term, have gone on to like become these educational good forces of influence in the online community.
Absolutely. I was so bored in school. I was never there. I was the even when I graduated, I was the person with the most hours missing, and I think I was the second best graduate. So I just, it was just so boring, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's the challenge, right? If you have people at different levels and different needs, and also for me, very soon it was clear, like, that's not practical. I'm really genuinely never going to need this. And even I was saying this a lot during my marketing studies, and now certain things as I'm growing my business coming back, and I'm like, now that actually makes sense to know that. But I believe that teaching people those concepts without putting them through the experience, it just goes right over your head, right? And I would say I'm not a dumb person or something, and I was I finished like really strong in my studies as well. But unless you've needed this, you don't understand the practical importance of something. And so you don't have the emotion to the knowledge, right? So it's not practical. You can't do anything with it. You can only conceptualize it in retrospective.
Yeah, yeah. And I think as well, like what I see in the parts of the journey you've shared so far is that you experienced a lot of hardship and a lot of different types of hardship that really prepared you for just the brutal reality of the entrepreneurial journey.
Yeah.
And the brutal reality of like being online. And, you know, anytime that you're doing anything of significance online, you will experience hate, you will experience highs. Even the story about you, your book that you wrote,
yeah. You
know, and the rejection that comes with that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like how many of us online have poured our heart and soul into something and then posted it out and it's like crickets,
mm-hmm.
you know, or someone says something mean about it or whatever. And then also, and you know, we don't have to talk about this if you don't want to, but like even with your mum, you know, experiencing that, the highs and the lows that come with that disorder,
mm-hmm.
and you had a front row seat to that at a young age. It's fascinating how, I say this probably every single episode, like nothing in your life is wasted. Like it all gets used for good later on, you know?
Everything gets used. And I think, for example, so I think there must be an almost direct correlation between your willingness to face rejection and your success. I genuinely believe that. And the more you're willing to expose yourself to that, and the more you can see it as a part, it's almost like a currency.
Yeah. you're building up the pain check, and then you get to cash it in.
And, you know, even right now, right, I feel like it's worth the risk being rejected, because otherwise you never know. And you don't know what door eventually opens if you knock. So I believe that. And when you said with my mom, I believe that that genuinely gave me the biggest superpower, which is when you have someone who's not necessarily stable, right, you become hypervigilant and you become really empathetic in a sense that you're always gouging, whereas the person to a point where you start to feel them as though it was your own feelings. And when it comes to, for example, writing copy, creating offers, emphasizing with my client, I think this experience really gave me a superpower in that regard, because I can feel what the consumer feels. I can feel what they need to hear. I can sit in that feeling it in the pain, and I just have a knowing of, okay, this is what it must feel like. And that's because I was raised like that and I had it so early, makes me an introvert as well, because it's hard for me when I'm with somebody, then I'm like, there's always this layer of, you know, scanning, like, how are they right now? What did I say? How did it land? Yes. So there's this constant like hypervigilance that you have, which makes it exhausting to be with people, which is also why community is a great container, by the way, because you can kind of build up the guard. So in that regard, it's exhausting, but it's then also a superpower for, you feel so much that you can really meet all kinds of people where they are, because ever since you were young, you screened everyone all the time, and when things happened, you saw their reaction. So you now understand not only for yourself, but for such a large spectrum of people, what makes them tick and how can things be perceived. And I think if you don't have that, you very largely see life through your lens, right? But if you have had to adapt to so many perspectives, you can see so many point of views and you can empathize with so many different type of people. So I think that was the biggest gift. And I also want to say we're like on very good terms now, right? So also learned to let go and forgive that and set my own kind of boundaries and expectations in that regard. So none of this is ever lost. And everything is also the good things, right, that happen to you shape you. I don't want this to be like, you know.
Hey, you gotta suffer all the time.
No, exactly. Like nobody, I don't think everybody needs trauma to become a great entrepreneur. But I mean,
if you've got it, hey, it might be useful.
Who said that? I think with Bogdan, I had a conversation. He was like, you turn your shit into gold. I was like, yep, that's true.
It's really crazy, actually. I haven't heard anyone say what you've said and the way you've said it. And actually, like, even just felt a little bit emotional there. Like, I've experienced a lot of codependency in my life and a lot of codependent relationships, particularly whenever I was younger. Mm-hmm. And I always have believed that it gave me the superpower of sensitivity that I use every single podcast interview that I do now, where you gauge people, you try to understand, to see where people are at. Can you push into that area? Can you not, etc.? Yeah. And I'm going to make a guess here. I'm prepared to be wrong. I did a lot of one-on-one work with people because this superpower is very valuable, but it burned me out like crazy.
Yeah.
Did you experience that?
Absolutely. And it is the codependency that you describe, right? There's a big reason I think why people are so drawn to me is because I have those codependency tendencies. And so it is genuinely true that I care more than many other coaches about their outcome, because I feel them often as almost an extension of myself, right? Is that healthy? Probably not, right? But I care so freaking deeply, and they sense that, right? So when somebody genuinely cares about you to a point like where they check in with you that you didn't expect, or they really go the extra mile, because it feels like an intrinsic need for me to see that person succeed. I think that's what makes me like a very attractive figure. Not necessarily like really healthy as a one-to-one coach for myself, but then also for the person, because long term you have to empower them, right? But I also believe that I'm a big fan of dichotomy, right? And thinking or letting go of dichotomies and thinking in spectrums. So I believe that when you know that what you're working with, right, and you also know what you potentially create, you can choose to say, okay, I am overextending and I am giving more right now, because I can really feel that if I'm not setting that hard boundary right now, I get that person to a different place. Mm-hmm. But what I learned over time is letting the person know gently, right? So, you know, I shouldn't be doing this right now, because ultimately we need you to be able to do that. I had this very recently with a strategic partner. So it was a really beautiful story. Somebody who has been with me since 2020. Right. And I helped her build a really successful membership in a German speaking market. She was at 10K monthly recurring revenue. And then she was thinking it doesn't grow fast enough. So she killed it and went to a high ticket. Right. So we lost a little bit touch, not from any perspective other than I was like, I can't massively help you with high ticket because it's not my wheelhouse. I will never think in those strategies. They will, or how can I say it? high ticket is almost for me the logical consequence of you have amassed so many people now that you help and you're in such demand that you can really cherry pick the people that for them it's not a high ticket. For them it's a smaller expense, right now. And because they have so many things in place, a small effort from you can be a big leverage for them because there is so much substance to work with. So that is the form of high ticket that I start to consider maybe opening up. Because I also see if you completely gate, there's a ceiling to how much you can help people. And there are people that are just at the stage, they don't consume a course anymore. I don't consume courses anymore, right? Because I don't have the capacity, but I book a done-for-you service or I book a VIP day because I'm like, for me, that's worth it. I can easily afford it. It makes the most sense for me. So I recognize now I have built this audience and there's this chunk that needs it. Other than that, I don't know how to succeed with selling cold traffic, anyone a high ticket.
The high ticket relationship, there's a much higher level of expectation that comes along with that.
Yeah.
And if you are someone who cares extremely deeply about your high ticket people, then you're going to give a lot off yourself. And that might run into some issues with boundaries, overextending yourself, etc. That's the first thing. And you were the first person that I really heard say that clearly, where it's like, you know, high ticket, It requires so much from you as the creator, as the entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Whereas low ticket, you're able to serve lots more people with better boundaries. That's the first bit. The second bit is that, have you ever seen that meme where it's like the difference between a $50 client and like a $500K client?
Yeah.
I feel like it's so, so true where it's like the $50 client is like, hey, just following up. Has this been done yet? Like, I'm really, really nervous that this isn't going to work out. Like, and it's this big, long message. And then it's like the second one is just kind of like, oh, thanks very much. The invoice has been paid.
I see that for service provider lens versus the coach lens, because I think that we're in two different territories here, right? Because for the service provider, that's true. I sold websites on Fiverr for $100 per full website, right? Did that while I was pregnant. It was madness. And the clients that were paying more, like outside of that, I have charged 4,000 euros for the very same website, right? Or, you know, not significantly more work. And yes, that was true, right? But I believe that with high ticket, when done right, you are not selling that to a pain in the ass, sorry, client, because you understand that high ticket is for a certain type of person, the one that can afford your service with ease, and where your service for this reasonable price is completely justified. If I was now paying a coach, I don't know, for one one-to-one session a week, that would be $250 or up to $500 for that session with that specific person, right? But it needs to be that person that now fits the hole in my business, if that makes sense, and that can give me the right advice. So I believe that the biggest... That is true that the pain for people comes because they sell it to everyone. That's that's the thing. They sell it to everyone without qualifying, and they're not ensuring that they only get the high ticket offer to the people that are ready to receive the value.
Yes.
Right? And so, and your communities can be the funnel to get people to that level where they're able to receive the value, because now they have all the systems in place and they're not paying you, I don't know, $5,000, so you show them how to link up a Facebook lead generation with your email autoresponder, right?
Yeah.
That's not $5,000 value. And I think that's where a lot of people go wrong. But that's also what the market was, because for a long time, most people's high ticket program was how you create a high ticket program and then sell it to everyone and anyone,
right?
And so that I think that's where a lot of the dysfunction was created, because people thought they could shortcut their way when it's really you have to first build your brand, build your methodologies, make your own market, put yourself in demand, and then you sell a high ticket. But people were just saying, you know, there are people charging thousands of dollars for their package, and they were like, yeah, I can also do that without seeing that full evolution of the coach and their offer suite and their experience. And I think that's was 2020 and where the most things went south in the coaching industry. Yeah.
Totally. So how have you gone about setting better boundaries for yourself by moving towards more of the low ticket community model?
So I think reducing one-to-one is a big portion, gating access to myself, you know, no DMs, things like that, funneling communication. And then ultimately also eventually establishing a team for answering the questions that, you know, keep coming again and again. I think those were the biggest advantages. And then just referring people back and letting them know, look, this is a low ticket community and we can only keep it accessible and for this price because it's not one-to-one coaching. I think just by having that container, people naturally understand better, you know, where the boundaries are.
Yeah, if it's $8 a month.
Yeah, or even if it's $50 a month or even if it's $97 a month, right? I think that the container alone clarifies a lot of the boundaries. And then, of course, you also have to hold them up. And honestly, I have to say, I hired my operations manager to also help me with boundaries and hold me accountable. Mm-hmm. So she, after every group coaching call where I go over, she actually starts to interrupt now on my behalf. And I realized that it's a fairness question. So what I really love about my operational manager is she's a black and white person, right? So we're complementary in that regard. And I think you should, although it's often painful, hire people that are complementary, right? And that think like completely different than you and that have completely different skill sets as you. And so she made me really understand that when I'm in the coaching call and there's a person that's needier or pushier than somebody else and I give them more of my attention, how unfair that is to everyone else. And that was a point of view that I didn't see. It's like if you would have multiple children and there's one that is particularly needy, does that justify your other children not getting the same kind of love and attention?
Right.
It doesn't, right? So, and you also don't do that child a favor. So that is the thing that I was missing, was the point of view of while you're over delivering for this person, and you can do it at your cost. She was like, I don't mind, right? If you want to destroy your mental health, fine, go with it. But it's not fair what you do to others. And that was the first time it clicked for me. I was like, yeah, you're right.
She used your own empathy against
you. Yeah, yeah.
She knew exactly what button to push.
Yeah. And that's why I pay her the big bucks.
But it is so true, you know, like, I'll be honest, you know, Mark's sitting and behind the cameras here, like a mistake that I've even fallen into the last year is hiring people who are really similar to me and complementary to me and who are really creative and really fast action based. And, you know, we were reviewing stuff recently and it's like, bro, we need like more like boring people in this business yeah. who are like operational implementation, like are going to see things through all the way to the end. But it's somehow against your natural intuition to do that. So I love that feedback.
I think that, you know, we're seeking the entrepreneurial types,
right?
And I'm very much a person like move fast, break things. What's really difficult to find is, it's actually not difficult to find, but you just have to be clear on what you want. I need the people that are like checklists and that are like, but the last time we said this and now we're doing that. So can we please clarify how that was meant? So
move slow and fix things.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, that also remind you of, hey, there's a for you boring project that you abandoned, but we need that here. And yeah, I think that is a really, really good addition. I also think, like, for the longest time, I was like, I need to change, right? I need to figure this out. I need to get better. But it's actually just, I need to just create enough weight on the other side that kind of pulls me back in. And the only thing that I need to be mindful of is when I'm asking for the feedback and I'm asking for the critique, and often I receive it, I then sometimes can feel about this, like, I hate my business. Like, this sucks. I want to run away. Because I feel like I'm doing it wrong. But, you know, when you build something, it's like this constant feedback loop, right? It's like, this needs to be fixed. Because I'm like, if I was doing it right, why are we fixing things all day? And why am I, like, all day, like, this is not working, this is broken, you need to finally do this. But, no, that's actually what building a business looks like.
Right.
Like, all the time, right? So, I think just normalizing that, and then again, like with the rejection, saying, that's not personal. That's just the nature of how this look, like what this looks like, right? And not making it about me story. I think that is really, really helpful.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's a great thing that Alex Ramosi always talks about, is mm-hmm. that's why people fail in business, because they don't stick with it long enough for the like continuous iterative improvement cycle to take place. They're like, I want to run away from it. And then they run away from it. And then they just are faced with the same thing. Do you know what I mean? It's like you have to go through that journey. Otherwise, you're going to be wandering around the wilderness for 40 years. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when did low ticket, like, did you have like a big breakthrough moment where you're like, low ticket communities is going to work for me. This is the thing that I was looking for. Yes, I'm going to go all in on it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
I was finishing studies and then I changed the job and I was working as head of marketing and then later e-commerce for a wholesale company. Then I acquired Amazon as a customer and I noticed like they have a little error in their ordering system where they would order end of life products for a very high price. And so I was telling that to my boss and I was like, we can, you know, we can ask people for sending us their stock data to find end of life products, then they will order it and then we can send that to them with a really great markup. And he didn't, was not interested in that. So I went to my neighbor who was like a rich guy for me. Like back then he was like, you have the money, I have the idea, this is what it looks like, can we do that? And he was interested in doing that. So we did that and it grew from 0 to 12 million in turnover in 9 months. And then Amazon was like, yeah, that's too expensive. And from one day to the other, cut the ropes.
Oh, man.
And I knew that this will happen, but I also was not, I was not prepared for so quick. And I've hired a few friends. And my back then long-term relationship, almost a decade, broke apart during that process, right? So now in retrospect, it all makes sense.
Yeah.
But in that moment, you know, it was like a huge identity loss. And so I was like, yeah, I take my payout because I had earned well during that time. And I'm going to figure like life out and I'm going to travel. And then I traveled to Sziget Festival in Budapest. Mm-hmm. And that's when I met my
Shout
husband.
Out to Dave. Come on, man. If we could turn the cameras on, I would show you.
And so, you know, we were just casually like starting to date and you know, saying, yeah, we're trying to get to figure this out. I was visiting him in Canada. We tried to build up an ad agency because, you know, that was also what has worked before. And then we saw like on Upwork, there's a lot of coaches actually, right? And so in Austria, the whole coaching industry was not like here, but I had no track record. So I was like, okay, let me try it. And after we had fallen for a guru with a done-for-you funnel agency product and lost basically all the $12,000 I had saved, as in when I was working on Fiverr building websites during my pregnancy, I was like, okay, I really have to figure this out. And I was like, okay, I always knew kind of have to build a personal brand, but it always felt so scary, you know,
right.
Again, here's my book.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to do that. But then I was like, okay, you know, and I feel like sometimes we put ourselves like financially with the back against the wall, just so we have to do these things that we actually want to do. So there was a no excuse kind of moment. And then we built, like I said, okay, I want to be my own living case study. I want to grow a Facebook group from scratch, document how fast I can grow it. And then I want to pre-sell a coaching offer at the end. So I did that. I sold a 12-week coaching program, just doing with people the same that I have done in this month, like documented. By the end of that month for $9.97, got 10 people in. So it was like, wow, $10,000 launch. And the original goal was to go with those people through the program and then relaunch it again for a higher price. Because while I was building up, coaches were seeing that. I got my first job having ads for others. And especially for one lady that was selling a coaching program for $6,000, right? And I was a fan, right? I have never had even seen somebody going live before and all of that. So I was, and there was, she was doing a challenge with a challenge chatbot. And my mind was blown. I was like, what is this? This is amazing. I want to do all of this. And so, you know, my thing was like, yes, I'm going to relaunch and I'm going to sell that. And she was also like really pretty, right? It was this whole girl boss thing. And I was like, I'm a girl boss now. I was so infatuated with that idea. I was so on fire. And that was what I wanted to do. But then running ads and being in that program also as an ads coach, I quickly realized, oh my goodness, like people are not getting the results and that they have paid so much money, they have put so much hope into this. And then when I was delivering for my own people, my most successful student, Laura Bull, she's now, we actually now started to do a profit share kind of together.
Nice.
She built since 2020 seven-figure journal brand on Amazon. And so she at that time, she had started from scratch, and in the first month of working with me, she sold her program for $20,000. The testimonial is still on my YouTube channel. Yeah, but wait. Then there was another client. By the end of the 12 weeks, he literally was not decided on his niche yet. I couldn't get him to do it, right? And so I kept working for him, and eventually after a half year of coaching and doing a lot of things for him, he had recouped his full investment and made like 1,500 euros profit. But if you look at all the work, I was like, something's wrong here, because I did the very same thing with both people, right? So there must be more to it than me being a good coach,
right?
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I was like, I cannot force him to make that decision. I cannot go home right when he's canceled another call on me, like, and pull him out of his bed and be like, we're working now. So I very much saw my own limitations during that process. And I saw what happens kind of behind the scenes of that high ticket program. And all of that mortified me. And I was like, you know, with that in conjunction with my own experience of losing so much money, I was like, I don't know if high ticket it is. But I still was so, right, when I'm committed to something, I'm committed. And I had my first Facebook ads bootcamp, like also challenge style kind of launch. It was going so well during that. And on the last day when I was pitched, I was already feeling like, I don't want to do this. I wanted to pitch it for $1,997, so $2,000, right? Something's not right. And then in that moment when I wanted to pitch, my connection actually broke. So it was really, that's why I say it's unbelievable. But in that moment, I even lost the connection. And I was like, okay, I think this is a sign. And then I was like, okay, I'm actually not pitching something. I'm just selling the bootcamp recordings. And I was selling it for $97, and I think I had 15 sales or something. That was still like great for me. And then I was like, okay, I don't think I can do any of this. And then I remembered the first thing that I bought online after I came out on the other end of Amazon was Cat House Facebook Ads That Convert. And that was a membership. And I was like, what if I did a membership? And then that was, okay, actually, I should be doing low ticket. That's when it was set in stone, and I was like, yeah, I'm a low ticket coach. And then the first breakthrough was after I decided in August. In September, I officially launched my membership. And I had over 2,000 people on my email list, or in my Facebook group, and I think 1,500 on my email list. I hope that's correct, around those lines. I got 9 people in my membership. That's not a lot, right? But, you know, you got to start somewhere. And then over the course of the next month, I was up to 11. And I was like, okay, I need a funnel. And so I tried all kinds of funnels and nothing would work. And I would run $100 test balloons, which was a lot of money for me at that time, right? Because those 10K from all the way back in, I don't know, what was it? May? It's gone now.
Yeah.
I had my done for you ads clients, right? But none of it was really to a point where, like, I had a little baby too, and they've had to go back to Canada. Our relationship was a little bit rocky at that time too, especially because of that financially challenging situation. And we knew if we cannot make this work, we can't be together. And we both had a different vision. He wanted to stay with the agency model. I wanted to do this boss babe coach thing. So we were not on the same page with it at all. And so there was a lot of tension. And actually, he had to go back to Canada in September. And so I knew I was going to be alone for at least 3 months with our son. And now I just sold that membership and it's going so slow. So I actually, at one point, I actually messaged the first member, the one I met in Vancouver, I told you about. I was like, hey, I'm so sorry. I think I can't go through with this because I will be alone now. So I was literally canceling the membership, right? And she was like, oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. I understand that. But if you should ever want to do this again, I'm 100% on board with you. And somehow the way she said that, I was like, you know what? I take it back. We do this.
You just needed like one little drop of like motivation. You're like,
I know. I guess I just needed to feel like she didn't buy it out of reciprocity.
Right.
So because at that moment, also because so few people bought, and it was all people I have helped like a lot in my free community, right? So a part of me was like, they just bought it because they like you, right? And because they feel like they owe something to you because you helped them so much. And I think that comment from her just made me understand, no, she actually thinks it's valuable, right? And so that kind of really pulled me back in. So shout out to Vivian. She's actually now a business partner. We have a Pilar membership together. So, you know, that also worked out really well. And then I was like, okay, I'm doing this. Grew really slow. I need a funnel running $100 test balloon after the other. I made eventually over 30 funnels. And the one that clicked was a freebie to video sales letter. And I kept re-recording the video sales letter. The last one I did was in my dad's sauna while my son was sleeping. After I met with the coach I told you before that I was still running ads for. And they were so under pressure with their program because they had like a really great first launch. And then, you know, when you don't get people the results, you start to doubt yourself. And, you know, I think it just changes how you show up. And so every launch was... Yeah, so you could, and she eventually pivoted, but you could just see that she also got the launch methodology and I think parts of the program taught by another. So she was just replicating. The replicating worked beautifully. But when she saw that, oh, I'm actually not able to help people to the extent I expected it, I think that really crushed her. And I think that also, for me, spoke to her kind of value system. I still would have done some things differently, but... That was such a frantic situation there to make it work, also behind the scenes, because, you know, there was this big team. Many people forget that about high ticket coaching, right? How many like fixed costs you have as well, and how much ad spend you have, and how little is actually left by the end of the day. So there was, I was coming off the call, I was sweaty, I was like done, because there was also this humongous pressure on me to get in cheaper challenge leads as well. And all the approaches that I suggested was like, I said, let's work with a tangible freebie, let's nurture people. And then, you know, all of that was like, no, we see this coach does this, let's replicate that. And I was like, guys, you don't know what their backend looks like, right? This is a very reasonable cost per lead that we're getting. So I just constantly had to kind of justify, and wasn't really getting through with my approach because, you know, they were like, yeah, you're low ticket, what do you know? So, it was a really challenging situation. And then after, I was okay, done with the call. I have a few, like half an hour till Danny wakes up. Let me try to record another video sales letter. And then I put that one up, ads again. And my mom visited me in this night. And I came out and I had in the morning and I had one sale for $27 cost per purchase. And the membership was $27 at that point. And I was coming to my mom. I was like, Mama, I have a sale. We made a sale. And she was like, yeah, how much is it? I was like, $27. She was like, okay. I was like, no, because I have sold this in a funnel and I'm breaking even. And she was like, okay. You know, at this point, everybody was like, when is she taking a job? Yeah. Please.
She's like, Evelyn, this won't even cover Aldi. Like, what are you
talking
about?
Like, you need to get a job, girl. You know, so this is also critical phase, right? When your whole family is just looking at you and are like, yeah, you're embarrassing yourself and everyone else. And can you please get a job? So she didn't get it, but I knew, like, that's it. That was the moment where I knew it's going to work. When I had the first $27 break-even cost per purchase for my membership, I was like, yeah, this is going to work. And in the next month, I was scaling the membership to over 100 members. So, yeah, that was the big, like, breakthrough moment. Yes. I eventually broke the funnel. You know, there are a few moments where I was like, it's working, it's broken, it's working, it's broken. But, you know, I think that's also like a big part of the entrepreneurial journey. But also, like we talked before, the moment when my life really changed was when we had enough that I know I'm able to sustain my family doing just this full time. That was when everything was different.
Yeah.
And when the highest quality of life jump came. Since then, you know, we more than 5x'd the monthly income after tax, 20x, I think. But it didn't significantly improve or change the life quality. So I think when you're at this point where you can do all in what you love, yeah, that's the moment of freedom.
Something that has always really stood out to me, even the first time I interviewed you, like, I don't know, 2 months ago now, 1 month ago. Time's so weird. A lot has happened in a short space of time, hasn't it? Is that you have this desire to, like, protect and provide for your family, and you also have a desire to protect and provide for your community owners, and you want to empower other people to do the same. Mm-hmm. So this idea of, like, protecting and providing, like, how has your growth with this business, like, lifted up and provided for others? If you could give us a few examples.
I believe it has. So for my immediate family, I think it has provided a lot. Although that's also challenging, I thought that I could provide much more for my family and do much more. And I realized that that's not asked for. So that was, like, really also a very interesting rejection for me, right? To, for example, I invited my dad to come see us in Canada and got a few, like, really nice hotels and everything, and realized he's so uncomfortable with this,
right?
So he doesn't want that. So I got kind of a rejection in that regard, that it's like, I thought I'm going to do all these things to spoil my family.
Right, but he gets a lot of pleasure from actually doing that for you, because you're his daughter, etc.
Yeah, so that there's, and you know, with every person you have this, and even for my little brother, right? I contributed something to his wedding, and then I wanted to give more, and he was like, thank you, but thank you. You know, so it was like, I don't want to feel, like, guilty for that, and so that was really interesting, because I thought that would be received better, but it wasn't. And I think how I'm providing for others at the moment, interestingly enough, I think I provide a lot of permission to go after those things in your unique way. So I think that's one of the things, inspiration in that regard as well. And I do believe that the tools, the strategies, of course, right? So we have many membership owners that are full-time right now. And where we talked about, please go on my Instagram, check, like, it's really changing people's lives to be able to do that. And I think I also provide kind of the space, like a safe haven for people. I think a lot of people especially that got burned in the business coaching industry before, right? So on school is kind of a little bit of a different setup, because we have a lot of YouTubers, right? So we have a broad mix of people and communities. So I'm really interested, because it's so different from my bubble where I'm coming from. In my bubble where I'm coming from, so many people have been burned before, and then they come in the Coach Growth Hub and they come into my world, and they feel like the first time this is a safe space. You know, I'm not getting upsold into something big, and I can hang out here. I can move at my own pace. So I think that, or at my own speed, I think that that's also something that I was able to provide for others. And I hope that, I'm not sure if that's providing. I think there is people who don't necessarily want to lead, but they stand up when they see that there's the need and that there are things not going in the right direction. And I believe that that's what I've done in the industry. I don't need all the attention. If you look at other people in my industry that are very polarizing, right, that are riding the dividing wave, I'm not that at all. I'm not seeking controversy or anything. But I also see the need for certain things to really be said. And I think that I'm stepping up like that. And with that, I'm also empowering others to do the same for their respected fields. Right. And I believe that that has a trickle effect. That and making their knowledge so accessible, creating communities, it impacts so many lives, because everybody you touch, right, with that knowledge, they have families. And I think that when just one part of the system heals itself and improves itself and grows, it uplifts everyone else who's ready to grow. Right. So I think the best thing you can do for yourself and for the whole system is to grow and kind of role model that.
Yeah. And actually, I think a really good example of that, like, I basically think what you've just described is defined as leadership, right?
I find it hard to receive that, because
you do, but that's fine. I'm going to say
I don't want to be like pedestal, because I'm figuring a lot of things out.
But a good example of this is, you know, you went live recently and I think you did like a financial breakdown of like how much money you actually make mm-hmm. after tax, after ad spend, after operations, da 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 da. And so there's an example of like leadership that then for the people who see that also have their own communities, oh, I'm going to do this for my industry. Mm-hmm. I'm a crypto guy. I'm going to actually break down how much that is. And it just provides, you know, it heals that part of the system where everyone wants to pretend that they're making way more money than they really actually are. Yeah. And that leadership can then ripple across lots of different industries just because you did it for yourself, for your specific niche, for your specific community. So I think that's a really good example. Also,
thank you so much for talking about that and sharing that. I think that is a good example for standing up when you think like something is going wrong. And interestingly enough, I got critique from that for that. So I got a lot of love from many people, but I got critique from other coaches that were like ridiculing how little profit I make, and they were like, yeah, so you know, you should be doing more organic marketing because then your profits would be higher. Without kind of sharing their own profits. And I think that why I still want to do it is because, how can I say this that it doesn't come across rude? How can you be so out of touch that 600,000 euros a year after tax you think is not a lot of money?
Right.
There are people in our industry saying things to others like, if I was only making 50,000 a month, I would be ashamed.
Right.
Like, how can you be so out of touch? How can you be so condescending? And I believe if I also, it was the same, I could have gone for the first place in the school game, right? I don't know, Hamza, I think, can never be underestimated, and he probably had a lot of aces up his sleeve. I don't know what he would have done if I would have done that. I'm not trying to say if I would have changed the strategy, I would have won, but I had a lot of people, including you.
Including me. Dave, I don't know if you know this. I sent Evelyn a message like towards the end of the school games, and I was like, Evelyn, like, do a 999 offer. Like, you've got this. Like, like pump it up. And it was like one of the most humbling experiences of like definitely the last year, where like I felt like you just like just put a dagger in my heart. Just went, no, I would never do that because it's against my values. And I was like, oh my goodness.
I couldn't do that because, yeah,
it was a new ticket person.
It was because I wanted to. So I got a lot of messages, and after I reflected about this, you know, I have now built market for myself, and
yeah.
I am reaching enough individuals that have memberships that make 20,000, 30,000, 50,000 a month,
the
right?
You said earlier, you can cherry pick and high ticket for them. It would be like $100.
Exactly. If somebody has a membership and it makes $20,000 a month for recurring revenue, and I had actually multiple people like that reaching out to me and be like, can I have you as a one-to-one coach? I know you don't do one-to-one. And I was like, no, I don't do one-to-one. Sorry. But, you know, now I recognize like there are enough people like that out there, contrary to my belief, right?
I really want to stress this. I love how you flip the industry on the head, where it's like most people will go for high ticket first, get the cash flow in, and then, but you're like, no. Like, develop your value, build out your assets, prove yourself to the marketplace, get people results at $8 a month.
Yeah.
And then you're qualified to go for the high ticket.
And, you know, you are also, I think many people that go high ticket first, they completely overestimate how capable they are. You have to serve hundreds, thousands of people with the same problem to understand that problem in enough nuance to really help every person. You know, when I've been helping thousands of people with their Facebook ads across different niches, coaching niches, different offers for 3 years now, the amount of pattern recognition I have now from the amount of data I've seen,
right.
Now I feel qualified to charge a high ticket. And I don't believe that anybody who has even ran ads for multiple high ticket clients for low ticket offers has a similar amount of experience. And that's my unique asset that I have built. And nobody, you know, can replicate that, because first work with thousands of people and see this amount of offers, see this amount of ad accounts, turn the amount of offers around. Like I did, right? And then we talk again, because I think there's so much in every single problem you solve, there's so much depth and nuance, and there's such a different spectrum across the different people, niches, etc. And only if you have experience that in depth, I think you're a really capable coach. And I'm still learning every single day from every single offer. So I believe that that's why people greatly overestimate themselves. And also people that sell high ticket coaching programs that are actually structured like memberships, right? So you get one weekly group coaching call, you have the pre-recorded recordings. I think that because they don't have the community that gives them feedback and they're not seeing what results people are getting or not getting, they're under the assumption that the program is better than it is. Mm. I genuinely believe that. And I've seen so many high ticket coaches coming into my membership program because they're like, I don't know what happened. I used to sell, you know, 10 spots a month. I barely get one. Like, I'm barely getting by anymore. And it's like, oh yeah, because nobody has money anymore, cost of living crisis. And I'm like, no, the market is professionalizing and your product is not as good as you think. And I'm sorry. But that's the problem, right? Nobody wants to spend the time and the effort to develop their product. I'm the product, right? My mind is the product. Of course, everything I put out is a tangible extension of that. But I mean, people are still gatekeeping things like your ideal client avatar.
Right.
Right. That was something in 2020 that every like coaching higher ticket business coaching program was like, this is how you map out your ideal client avatar. There are probably thousands of YouTube videos now that help you with that. Things are changing. Things are professionalizing. This is just not good enough anymore. And if you're so in such a scarcity mindset that you always hold back and gatekeep and put everything behind the paywall and think about, oh, this person is only paying how much? I'm keeping that for the higher paying like clients. No, every time you pour everything you got out into your audience, into your low ticket communities, it fills up with better stuff, you know, because you pour everything you know into them, new questions come and new downloads come.
Right.
Like you test new things and now you get better. And now you suddenly have knowledge that you don't even know was there. And I always say to people that are afraid to give away the farm, it's like, if you're afraid to give away the farm, you have not found the farm yet. And I think that's really important to know. But we wanted to quickly say for the school game, for the end, right? So everybody was saying, you need to raise the price. Please raise the price. Please raise the price. I was like, no, I can't do that. Because one thing that I wanted to do is, you know, position myself as the low ticket membership coach. I wanted to really show people that it's possible with a low ticket community to make a significant income. And if I would have gone for the first place because of my ego, I would have put the message second. Mm. And I couldn't do that because the whole goal was to really get the message out there. And plus what I would have also said is that $82,000 monthly recurring revenue is not enough. And isn't it enough? I mean, most people would say it was enough at a tenth of that.
Right.
That was pretty much exactly at a tenth of that monthly recurring revenue. It was enough to beautifully sustain like my family and go for a nice dinner twice a month.
Yeah.
So, you know, I didn't want to send that message either.
Yeah, I never thought about it before. Where, like, you know, businesses will spend like thousands, they'll spend millions of dollars on like market research groups.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, your community who are paying you to serve them, it's actually just like every single day is market research. Every single day is making your product better for them. It's this beautiful kind of win, 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 win.
Yeah.
Evelyn, this has been unreal. I feel like it's like a PhD in online community. It's really, really fascinating. Final question, and this is a question that I'm really excited for you to ask all of your guests on your new podcast. How has your business growth changed you as a person?
I think I got stretch marks on my soul. I have to say that. Because when growing so fast is like drinking experience through a fire hose, right? And there's so many cans of worms that crack open when the pressure is really high, and they all crack open at once, right? So all your relationships are tested, right? All the personal development issues you try to circumvent by just making enough money come back to bite you in the ass. Yeah. So
it all is, the demons come out.
All the demons come out.
They bring out all their friends. It's like, oh, we haven't seen each other for so long. Let's all go.
And you are in your most vulnerable state as well, right? Because you underslept. You're, you're on so much adrenaline as well, right? So you're kind of rushing through those experiences too. So I believe it, and I think the biggest danger is to become this nihilistic taskmaster, right? You've seen success. You know how you need to just push everything down to just function. And you can turn yourself into something really soulless if you're not careful. So I think the biggest, and that's why I'm saying, is like, you have to be so mindful to not, I don't know what the English proverb is, but in German we say, der Zweck heiligt die Mittel.
The
Zweck, the purpose legitimizes the methods. Do you know what I'm trying to say? So, you know, that the outcome justifies the means. Is that how you say it? The end justifies the means.
Yeah.
So I think that that is the worst thing that can happen. Especially if the end is not qualified, if the end is a certain number of members, is a certain income goal, right? I think there always need to be boundaries, right? I actually think that revisiting your core values, defining what success looks to you, who are you truly, right? What's your essence, right? What is left from that little girl that played the flute with the doctor on the ground, right? Where is that still? And holding on to that and saying, the end doesn't justify the means. I cannot win if I can only win in that way. And so I think that that's the biggest challenge, is saying, I can only win if I am not losing myself along the way and if I'm not sacrificing my values, my ethics, my authenticity. And that's a really, really, really slippery slope, because you have to freaking slow down
right.
every now and then and saying, okay, I need to look myself in the mirror and is this still the person?
Yeah. Growth for growth's sake is the ideology of a cancer cell.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people just trying to grow online and grow, but it's like, that's the classic, like, what would it profit a man if he gained the whole world but loses his soul
yeah.
in the process?
It's also, you know, I'm not big on politics or something, but I think it's this late stage capitalism thing as well. So I believe that we have to be so mindful with what we create and why, especially if we don't need it anymore, right? Once we have that financial freedom that we can choose to create whatever the fuck we want, why not contribute?
Yeah.
On the way here, I was listening to a podcast, and I wish I could remember who said it, but it's like he said something along the lines of, your life is about first finding your gift and then giving it away till the end. I believe, you know, I found my gift and now I'm giving it away till the end. And that feels like the thing we should be doing.
Evelyn, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.